I thought about you watching this movie because even I was a little put off by how, I mean, obviously the spiders are real, like the little ones, and they're everywhere, and they're creepy, they're crawly. Yeah,
Gross.
it is not for people like you.
Right. I don't want to admit that to Bill, to Mr. Rabane. I don't want to admit my arachnophobia. So we'll just keep that between you and me, and I guess everybody listening to this episode right now.
I'm going to sell you out 100%. Hello and welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Podcast. We're your hosts, Vincent Hannum
and Matt Levine,
and we're talking about all our favorite monster movies, the good, the bad, and the downright campy, and asking if they stand the test of time.
Traditional kaiju, creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between, all strange beasts welcome here.
Camp Kaiju is brought to you by Zach Linder and the Zach Pack, powered by Coldwell Banker Realty. Whether you're looking for your dream home, a savvy investment property, or expert guidance in a home rehab and flipping, the Zach Pack has you covered. Reach out today for top-tier real estate services and explore exciting investment opportunities. Don't forget to follow the Zach Pack on social media for the latest updates and insights. Check the link in the show notes for more information.
In a small Wisconsin town, something was about to happen that would send shockwaves around the world. From another world to destroy the Earth. It was the giant spider invasion.
Look at that!
There's still some X-ray shower from the ground level at a magnitude never before measured on Earth except a nuclear explosion.
Well, Doctor, it could be an abortive strike from a unfriendly power.
Oh, come on. You don't think a missile landed here?
I told you something landed here last night. Look, it's full of them.
I'm very concerned.
Well, frankly speaking, Doctor, so is the United States government.
I'm down here all by myself. They're hell-bent on destroying that beast. The crowd's beginning to take over. We'll call the National Guard back. Tell them we need some heavy equipment. Guns, tanks, anything.
They came by the hundreds, by the thousands, killing and crippling, creeping, crawling creatures determined to destroy the Earth. Could anything stop them? Could anything stop the giant spider invasion? There has never been a film like this before.
Matt, what an episode we got tonight.
Indeed. Yeah, we'll be talking about the giant spider invasion.
With none other than the man behind it, Bill Rabane, the producer and director of this movie celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Yeah, so cool. And Bill, I'm sure we'll talk to him about this a little bit, but he actually shot new footage for the movie, which he's planning on incorporating into the film and then re-releasing next year, which is very exciting.
And that's what I really wanted to talk to him about, among other things, but is now that now that we have access to technology with computer graphics and whatnot, like, how is he incorporating new technological aspects into a very 1970s picture? And this movie is low budget. Not, it doesn't detract from the movie, but it's clearly a low budget movie. So I'd love to see how that translates 50 years later with new footage.
Yeah, totally. It'll be cool to watch the new version. And like, I would also like to ask him just like, why now? You know, I know it's the 50th anniversary of it, but are there other reasons to like revisit this project and re-release it? So I'm sure we'll talk to him about that soon.
Yeah. Let's get to some quick nuts and bolts while we're waiting for Mr. Rabane. So thanks for hanging out with us, friends. Truly, truly, truly. We couldn't do this show without you. All your support, listener comments, I'm getting them. I'm responding. I love the back and forth. That's what I love about Camp Kaiju, that we have this platform to talk to you all, engage with listeners, and just talk about monster movies. You can leave a rating and review of this here show wherever you listen to podcasts, but follow us on patreon.com/Camp Kaiju for more videos, reviews, merchandise, Zoom happy hours, you name it. We're really going to lean hard into the listener experience beyond the show in 2026. Get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts, what you're looking forward to at campkaiju@gmail.com, campkaijupodcast.com, Instagram, or even our voicemail number. Our hotline is 612-470-2612. And a special thank you to our current Patreon members and supporters, Jason, Chris, Sean, Peggy, and our anonymous patron. And if you all out there want to make the jump to a paid supporter of the show at patreon.com/campkaiju, if you sign up before 2026, we will send you a free tote bag. I don't know what it will look like yet, but it will be awesome and well worth, what, $5 a month? So all that and more, and eternal thanks, first and foremost.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, coming up on Camp Kaiju, it might be The Addiction. The Addiction might come out before this episode. Unsure yet. But Matt, let's talk about The Addiction as if it's our next episode.
Yeah, The Addiction, directed by Abel Ferrara from 1995, a vampire movie starring Lily Taylor. Black and white, a little artsy, very philosophical. Frank Olson was the guest star on that episode. Great to talk to him and, of course, to you, Vincent, about that movie. Really fascinating. One of the better vampire movies that I've seen, I would say personally. So yeah, fun conversation. Please check out that episode if you haven't already.
100%. And then following that, Sean Childers will join the podcast, and we're going to break down Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim from 2013. So I think, you know, was that 12 years? That's enough hindsight, you think, to gauge a movie's lasting impact?
Yeah, I think so. I think like definitely in the context of Del Toro's career and maybe just like the monster movies that have come out since then, like all the Godzilla X Kong movies and all that. Yeah, it'll be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. Following that, December is jam-packed, and it's a great problem to have here in the editing room. But after that, we will announce our season 6 lineup. First 6 months of season 6 in 2026. There's like a 666 theme going on here. Yeah, but we'll have some guest hosts, some previous guests from the podcast, joining us for about an hour. Just have some fun, drink some eggnog, talk about all the good times from 2025.
Can't wait. Honestly, the reveal of our upcoming titles for the next season is probably my favorite episode of the entire year. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's fun. Yeah, it's man, we've been doing this such a long time now that, yeah, we do have a bit of, we have like our own traditions on the show.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So the giant spider invasion, we'll have Bill talk about it, obviously, but it is about a meteor that crash lands on Earth in rural Wisconsin behind a farmhouse, and the meteor spews these like little geodes, they're called, little balls of rocks that happen to contain tarantulas. And the tarantulas dosed with high levels of radiation, because apparently they were born out of a dying star, and there's a black hole element to the story. But some of these spiders do grow to gigantic proportions and eat and terrorize the townspeople.
Yeah, it gets to be a little bit gruesome at times, but I would say like the giant spider is not really all that scary, although it does look pretty cool. But as I think I mentioned during our arachnophobia episode, I do actually have arachnophobia. I'm very scared of spiders. So like the small, like normal size tarantulas freaked the hell out of me in this movie.
I thought about you watching this movie because even I was a little put off by how, I mean, obviously the spiders are real, like the little ones, and mm-hmm. they're everywhere, and they're creepy, they're crawly.
It's gross.
It is not for people like you.
Right. I don't want to admit that to Bill, to Mr. Rabane. I don't want to admit my arachnophobia. So we'll just keep that between you and me, and I guess everybody listening to this episode right now.
I'm going to sell you out 100%.
That's fair.
But I do want to talk to him about using the live animals mm-hmm. on set. Were they easy to wrangle? We talked about that in our episode about arachnophobia. Now, I'm not going to talk to Bill about this, but I mean, I could, I guess. But let me ask you, I didn't see any maybe like overt or obvious signs of harm to the spiders.
There is one shot where we see a tarantula on top of like a dresser, and then it cuts to the young girl. I forget the character's name in the movie, and she is screaming. She's very scared, and then she like crushes it with an iron, and we do see blood splatter. So I think maybe they killed the spider in that shot, but I don't totally know.
But I need to look it up because there was so much. It was like a blood pop.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a real tarantula would pop like that. And the cut was so quick. Maybe we ask him about it. Should we ask him about it?
Yeah, yeah. Were any animals harmed during the making of the movie?
And look, despite how I may feel about it, I don't want harm to come to any animals in the movie. But that I'm not going to ask that question from a place of judgment.
Right.
I'm a filmmaker. I'm just curious how it was done 50 years ago.
Yeah. Right. On a very low budget also.
Yeah. Maybe they couldn't afford to kill a tarantula.
or maybe they had to like actually kill a tarantula because they didn't have special effects for it. I feel like it could go either way, but I'd be curious to hear that too.
Okay, let's ask him.
Or we could, you know, like you said, we could just ask him what it was like working with the animals and how they were, you know.
Yeah. Listeners, I've spoken to Bill on the phone a little bit. He's a very sincere sounding, genuine man and individual. Me and Matt are here just to generally learn from him about the making of this movie, his career. He worked apparently with Herschel Gordon Lewis. And Matt, can you speak a little bit more to that director?
Yeah, I actually haven't seen the movie that they worked on sort of together. Although I think actually Bill Rabane shot footage for it and then Herschel Gordon Lewis kind of took it over. So I don't know how much they actually worked together on it, but let me just pull up a list of his filmography real quick because I don't want to get any of the names wrong.
Yeah. I think the movie you're thinking about, we're talking about, is called Monster A Go-Go from
Indeed.
The early 60s.
Yes. And I have not seen that one, unfortunately, but Herschel Gordon Lewis, one of his nicknames is the Godfather of Gore. So he was one of the, you know, pioneers of low budget, kind of schlocky shock horror cinema. The Gore Gore Girls is an example of one of his movies, and that title kind of says it all. The Wizard of Gore, I have seen. That one's a lot of fun. Let's see here. Color Me Blood Red. I actually highly recommend that movie. That's about a painter who uses, you know, human blood for his masterpieces. That one's good. Blood Feast is another good one. So yeah, Herschel Gordon Lewis kind of just... The Wizard of Gore is another nickname that he had. Very, like, influential for the giallo genre and other horror movies as well.
An unknown species of horror is born as science fiction becomes science fact.
If you find any problems out there at the Colby place, just keep it to yourself.
He's over at Colby's. He's found another 20 or 30 hills just like the one we burned.
I mean, this right here is scientific phenomenon. As you know, all species of megalomorphs are cannibalistic. If you put them together, they'll kill each other off. They just don't colonize like ants or bees do.
An army of deadly predators searching, destroying anything in their path. Why did they come? What do they want? In the tradition of the great science fiction thrillers, Dimension Pictures presents Kingdom of the Spiders, starring William Shatner, Tiffany Bowling, Woody Strode, and introducing Altavis Davis.
The spiders in this area have organized themselves into an aggressive army.
I've never seen anything like it.
One minute they weren't there, and the next minute they were everywhere.
Jump, Attagirl!
Listen, there's thousands of them out there. We'll never make it.
Why haven't we heard from the sheriff? He must know we're trapped in here.
I'm telling you, I don't think we should chance it.
Your nightmares will never be the same. Kingdom of the Spiders. The next victim could be you.
What if circumstances were to magnify one of them in size and strength, took it out of its primitive world and turned it loose in ours? Then expect something that's fiercer, more cruel and deadly than anything that ever walked the earth.
Even science was stunned. The new atomic miracle should have been mankind's greatest boon. Instead, when such power to cause phenomenal growth proved dangerously unstable, man was confronted with his most shocking blunder.
The isotope triggered our nutrient into a nightmare.
A blunder that transformed a tiny insect into the 100-foot spider that was now ravaging the panic-stricken countryside.
The Jennings family has just moved to the small town of Canaima.
Oh, Ross, smell that air.
Oh, God.
In search of a simpler life.
Want to blow up a bullfrog?
Okay.
It's the perfect place.
Goodbye, crime. Goodbye, grime.
Except for one pesky little problem.
Come with me and look at the web.
The web?
I have a
terrible fear of spiders. Come on, we live in the country now. It's time to work through this irrational, paralyzing terror.
It's not irrational.
Hollywood Pictures and Amblin Entertainment present Jeff Daniels.
Honey, we're in the living room.
we need you to kill a spider.
And John Goodman.
Bill McClintock, Infestation Management.
Ooh, that guy's just a spider.
Would anybody object if I tore this floor out?
I would.
False alarm, then lead on. There's no spider here.
Every so often in a little town somewhere, there is a health scare.
There's a rumor going around that some kind of spider might have killed Sam Metcalf.
Doubtful.
Spiders make convenient culprits.
There's no spider here.
I think one of your Venezuelan spiders hitched a ride here.
There may be some spiders around here that are very dangerous.
Dad, chill out.
Just run.
They spread out from a central nest in a web-like pattern and dominate the entire area. So when that happens, this town is dead.
Better uncork my private stock.
Rock and roll!
Hollywood Pictures and Amblin Entertainment present Arachnophobia. 8 legs, 2 fangs, and an attitude.
Perk up, Lloyd. If we find the spider that did this, you can arrest him.
Arachnophobia, a thrillomedy.
What? You know what? This episode is the giant spider invasion of Camp Kaiju episodes. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Okay, listeners, so here's what happened. We had Bill Rabane on the call through no fault of his own, through no fault of anyone's. You know, the gremlins were at play in the machines here, and we had trouble getting Zoom to work. So that, okay, we'll pivot. I threw Riverside at Matt and Bill, and that was able to work. But as we were just saying, just like the bandwidth capabilities of the technology wasn't exactly what we wanted. So our interview with Bill Rabane is extremely truncated. I've salvaged what I could in the editing room. I've bumped up the audio as much as I can. So listeners, just be forgiving, but know that Bill is a sweetheart, and we really, really did get some great insight out of him. Unfortunately, and here's the last bit of news. Unfortunately, the recording on Riverside literally only got 12% of his audio. So there is 88% of his audio that we did not pick up. Lost to time, which is sad, but what we do have is great. And Matt, you and I are going to fill in a little bit what that conversation was.
Yeah, totally. Okay.
Hi, Bill. This is Vincent Hannum with the Camp Kaiju podcast. Good. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. No, we're getting it ourselves here in the Twin Cities. Is now still a good time for you to chat about the movie? Definitely. Yes, absolutely. I'll be online with the Zoom link. Okay. Yeah, take your time, sir. I'll be here with you, waiting for you. I totally understand. Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir. You got it. Bye-bye. Bill's getting a heavy snowstorm.
Yeah.
He's on the North Shore of Wisconsin. And he is bringing in outdoor furniture right now.
Oh, okay. that's cool. We're supposed to get snow here, too. So I understand that.
Yep. But he said he'll be on in 5 minutes.
Okay, cool.
Get one more chair in. Thank you, man, for doing this with me.
Yeah, no problem. hope he's able to join.
Yeah, we'll get it. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting, but, you know, talking to like a legitimate filmmaker here.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Hi, Bill. I just sent you the email link. Okay. Here's what I will do. I have a plan B, but I'll need to just send you another link and I'll give you a call back in about 5 minutes. Is that okay? Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll be in touch. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
I think we've got you. Yes, we did it. All right, thank you, sir. I'll hang up the phone and talk to you on the computer. All right, hey, we're here, we're met. We'll make it work.
Yeah, I wish. You know, getting old sucks big time.
You make it look good. I mean, you're on your feet all the time. I was watching clips of you on the news just a month ago. You're running this new restoration of the giant spider invasion.
Oh, yeah. What a nightmare that was.
Could you talk a little bit about how the last year has been with this new project?
Well, it's been pretty strange. You know, I sold the negative and the original picture to a friend in La La Land. And at that time, I was already, we were working on the 50th anniversary version, so I made a deal with the owner that I have three other copyrights on the picture, that, by the way, for director's cut and the 30th anniversary cut, now the 50th anniversary. So I have a lot of materials, but my friend Jeffrey Epstein in Hollywood is, I think it's okay, we've got a deal where we're joining forces and trying to, he has the remake, the two remake sequel rights, which of course I'm going to honor. But hopefully we can take the package, the 50th anniversary version.
I mean, congratulations on the new footage and the re-release. It's such good news that it's going to, you know, receive a wider audience and a new generation of people to love the movie. It's great news.
But Bill, Mr. Rabane, we'll let you go. We got snow here. I've got furniture. I know I should have brought in out in the back. But with that said, if you want to come back at all and just, you know, shoot the breeze about your movies or other movies, you know, we don't have to talk shop all the time, but we value your time and your insight and would, yeah, just love to continue the conversation another time if you're open to that.
Go to this theater to see the science fiction picture to end all science fiction pictures. Did he or didn't he? Is he a monster or isn't he? Only his space agency knows for sure, and they won't tell. When the capsule comes down without the astronaut, everyone is on the go, including who or what did come down. Monster a go-go. Here's the picture that grabs the screen and shakes it. The picture that makes you wonder if the Earth is coming to an end right in the theater in front of you. Never in your life have you seen such a combination of happy, sad, good, bad, rock'em, sock'em action. When you walk out, you wonder what you've seen, because never has there been a motion picture like this. Monster a go-go, with a genuine 10-foot-tall monster to give you the whim-whams. Monster a go-go, with astronauts and space capsules and pretty girls, and cosmic radiation and pretty girls, and screams and pretty girls. There's something for everyone in the picture they're all talking about, the picture with go. Monster a go-go.
On origin has claimed the lives of some 5,000 people. Scientists and medical experts from all over the globe have not been able to diagnose the disease, as they are unable to get within 100 miles of the affected area.
Deadly disease, strange disappearances, and panic in the streets. Has the world gone mad? Or is it extraterrestrial beings? Find out attention from her. Alpha Incident, a motion picture to penetrate the inner boundaries of your mind. Yay! The Alpha Incident.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Well, that's a reasonable remark.
Cut the crap, Jim. We've got final clearance on this stage of the project.
You, me, and Fielder.
Does he know?
Oh, yeah.
Where is he?
He's getting the animals ready.
Alpha 795.
A frightening story of four men and one woman caught in the nightmare of secrecy, forced to face their own worst fears.
If she had any sense, she'd be fast asleep.
The Alpha Incident.
I wonder if she ever ran those mazes. You know, I always fall for the intellectual type. What the hell happened here?
The Alpha Incident.
Get out of here.
Let go of me!
God, shock to the system must be unbearable.
Mama!
Mama!
The Alpha Incident.
The only time I stay in one spot this long is when I'm in bed with a chick or when I'm just sleeping.
The Alpha Incident, a most unusual science fiction thriller.
That wasn't a wild animal out there.
We can't fall asleep. If we do, we die.
Where does science fiction end and science fact begin?
Five people.
You will never know until you see the Alpha Incident. Only a handful of people knew the truth. And there was only one ultimate solution. The Alpha Incident. A drama so horribly close to the truth, it will blow your mind.
What a guy. What a gentleman.
And just, I mean, like, the first of all, how impressive it is that he made all these low-budget movies just out of sheer love for the art form and, like, having fun with it, like you said, and just being creative, and it's still going strong. It's all amazing. So cool.
So where do we begin? I mean, I'm assuming the 12% is the beginning. Bill was talking about the restoration efforts he's been leading. Did you pick up much on that?
Little bit. I'm excited to see when new stuff has been added. He didn't really talk about that too much, but he said that they'll have some kind of like sneak preview screenings coming up in Wisconsin. Hopefully more theatrical screenings later in 2026 and, you know, streaming and Blu-ray sometime thereafter. So not a lot of specific information, but more on the horizon, you know?
Yeah, and Bill is based in northern Wisconsin. And he was talking about getting the film screened in local theaters around that neck of the woods, including Duluth, Minnesota. So all of our Minnesota listeners, all of our Midwest listeners, you all in Chicago especially, you're within driving distance. And Matt, you know, northern Wisconsin is beautiful on the shores of Lake Superior, very woodsy.
Yeah, totally. I think he was saying that one of the screenings might be in Minocqua, or maybe he was talking about the shooting of the movie was around Minocqua. But either way, Minocqua is a very, very beautiful town.
Yeah, I love that area of the country. So it's exciting, though. Like I think on December 13th, he mentioned there is going to be a showing. I'll have those links in the show notes. But I'm serious. I mean, if it lines up, if I have a weekend, I'll drive up. I'd love to meet the guy in person.
Yeah, definitely.
What do we ask him? We asked him about the casting of the movie. I was very interested in that. This is a strong, you know, if we're talking good, bad, and the campy, one of my good elements with this film is the cast of the picture, the veteran casts. A lot of TV actors, supporting roles in Hollywood, but long careers. Bill talked about his friendship with Steve Brody, who who plays Dr. Vance, the NASA scientist called in to investigate the goings-on. Opposite him is Barbara Hale as Dr. Langer, the local physicist. And what I mentioned to Bill, what I had to commend him on was the chemistry of those two actors. And Robert Eastman, who wrote the script, but Robert Eastman plays the philandering alcoholic redneck who who adds a lot of camp to the film, but you wouldn't know it. Robert Eastman is a noted dialect coach and long-time veteran actor in Hollywood. So there are some names in the cast.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you mentioned Alan Hale of Gilligan's Island fame, who's also in the movie as the maybe lovable, maybe not lovable, sort of like boisterous sheriff of the town.
Yeah, I asked Bill about Alan Hale because I had read, and this is what's so great. I mean, what a treat to get the actual director and producer of the film on Camp Kaiju, because you and I read our notes and resources, but sometimes apparently they differ from the real experiences. So I had read that Alan Hale improvised a lot of his lines. For example, towards the end of the film, when the spider's running rampant in the city, he makes a Jaws reference as the sheriff. He's like, "That spider is as big as Jaws."
Yeah. And this came out in 1975, right? Which was the same year as Jaws. So that was a very timely reference.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm sure that was improvised. But I asked Bill Rabane, you know, did Alan Hale improvise a lot of his lines? And Bill said no. Alan was a professional. Now, Bill did crack a joke saying that the script, there was hardly a script at all. Like, they didn't really finish one, which I had read anecdotally. A lot of collaboration with the actors on the script. And Bill did talk about Robert Eastman in particular having ideas of camp to bring a more campy vibe to the picture.
Yeah, which is kind of strange because, like, you know, we were talking about this a little bit at the beginning of the episode or like before we started recording, but you know, it's campy and also like a little bit sad at times. Like there's alcoholism, there's like, you know, there's a brief reference to like a baby that died and like a couple sort of having marital strife after that. So yeah, it's strange. It's campy and it's kind of sad and bleak at the same time, at least in certain moments, you know?
Yeah.
But sorry, just on the casting note, I wanted to ask about, I asked Bill about the extras in the movie too, because one of my favorite things about it is just you feel that like the supporting characters, like the townspeople, were like just walking on the streets of like small town Wisconsin and like walked into this movie. And that's one of my favorite things about it. Like there's a scene where like a bunch of guys who were just drinking at the bar, like get their shotguns and they're ready to like go kill the spider, similar to a scene in Jaws, I guess. But, and like just the people in that scene are so, they have so much character and personality. I love the kind of like the background flavor. And I feel like you would know that this was shot in a small town somewhere, if not specifically Wisconsin, even without knowing that backstory, you know?
I do, and I love that aspect. And I mean, Bill's the real deal. He's just a Midwest guy. Listeners, he was smoking a cigar, multiple cigars when we were talking to him. He was talking about driving through the snow during a blizzard. It's like, if you live in this area, you know what it's like to drive 25 miles an hour to get to a destination, and it takes 3 hours to get there because the snow is sideways and nobody's plowed the roads. I've been there. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a true Midwesterner, and it was cool to hear him talk about, he didn't talk a lot about his origins in Chicago, but that's, I think, where he and his family moved at a very young age, and then he kind of like made his way up to Wisconsin from there. So it was kind of cool to hear about that backstory.
Yeah. Yeah, very easy to talk to. Very down to earth. He said, I don't know if this is kept in the 12% we got, but I asked him sort of tongue in cheek, you know, what's more brutal, driving in that blizzard or making any of his movies? Which I didn't mean as a knock. And I don't think he took it that way, but he good naturedly said, you know, the number one thing he kept in mind when making movies was to always have fun, which I appreciate. So If anything, I think his movies do have a sense of fun if you get to see other ones.
Yeah, sadly, Giant Spider Invasion is the only one I've seen so far, but I do think there is a sense of fun involved, even if some elements are surprisingly a little bit downbeat every once in a while. There's still like an air of, yeah, creativity, imagination, like just having a good time.
You did ask him about the spiders.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, there's a lot to say about both the real animal spiders, actual tarantulas that were used in the filming of the movie, and then the giant, you know, the titular giant spider of the movie. But yeah, I asked him about like the real live tarantulas, because there are a lot of them that are seen in the movie. And, you know, I mentioned this briefly earlier, but I am actually scared of spiders. So like some of those scenes were a little bit hard to watch. And, you know, I missed some of what he said, but I think he was saying that like, you know, his friend loved tarantulas and like they were kept in Bill's basement, like during the making of the movie, which he didn't enjoy very much. But yeah, I mean, I like that element. And he didn't really talk too much about like how difficult they were to work with. But I assume his friend, who was like a lover of spiders and a spider handler, kind of took care of that element.
Yeah, that was the special effects. The man behind the special effects on the movie. See, yeah, friends with Bill. Let me see if I can find that name and pull it up.
Is it Bob Millay?
Yes, Millay. Yep, yep.
And the spider work is pretty good.
I do too. I mean, there are, and we didn't talk to Bill about this, but, well, I did mention to him, again, a general praise that I have for, is the giant spider itself. Bob Millay rigged this thing up to a Volkswagen Beetle. And Bill did talk about, you know, he was working with the executive producer. What was the name? I forget the names, but he came, this guy came to Bill to make a movie about a spider. And the guy told Bill, we need it bigger, 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 bigger. And Bob Millay rigged this thing up to a Volkswagen Beetle. It looks like it's, the legs are puppet like. So honestly, I don't know how they rigged this thing up.
I don't know exactly either. From what I read online and a little bit of what he was saying in the interview, I think there were two people inside of the Beetle, the VW Beetle, who were like one of them was driving it, and I think the other one was like operating the legs, like puppetry or animatronics or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it must have been extremely difficult to do, like to drive, like to do both those things at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And now it's just me and you just talking as reviewers. I found the fact that the giant spider was on a car gave it a kind of fluid forward movement that I thought really worked.
Yeah.
And like, it didn't look clunky. And you know what? I think the film, the spider itself, objectively is goofy looking, but I was noticing the way it was shot, long shot at a distance, shot very up close, shot from like angles, all these techniques to hide the fact that it does look goofy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that works especially well in the scene where the spider arrives at a little league game and like all hell breaks loose and all the kids and the adults are like screaming, of course, and running away from this thing. That scene is pretty exciting, and like it at least looks very striking and unique, you know, because we see this giant spider in the background, but like you said, we never get a good look at it, and there's like all this chaos in the scene. It works pretty well.
And the scene where the spider's on top of the roof of the house and it's breaking in to get at the young woman. I mean, that scene, again, as goofy as the prop may look, the giant spider, it's shot well, and you have the arms coming in through the walls. There's a lot of shaking happening. Dishes are falling off the furniture. I mean, I think he did as good a job as he could with the budget he was working with.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bill was saying there was a different giant spider that was used for the scenes where humans are actually eaten by the spider. And I was surprised how gory those scenes were. Like, you see a human like sucked up into the spider and it's like blood pouring out everywhere. And like you see some of the corpses afterwards, and they're all like mangled, and they have like tooth marks in them or fang marks, I guess. It's like maybe not scary, but like definitely gross and a lot more just gruesome than I thought it would be.
Which helps this movie so much when they can get a little shock value out of it.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't expect people to get chewed up. In the beginning, there are mutilated bodies of cattle that are strewn about, which looks like Bill went to the butcher shop and purchased a bunch of meat. So it's like all very real. And I love it for that. It's got that real like 70s grit to the overall aesthetic of it.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the reasons I feel like it's both campy and kind of like sleazy. And I don't necessarily mean that in a totally negative critical way, but just like, yeah, it's gritty. It's like kind of unseemly or like unseemly is a better word than unsettling, but there's just like something. Yeah. Gritty is a perfect word for it. Something gritty about it.
It's like low budget, but taken very seriously mostly done really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else did we talk to Bill about? We talked to him. We went a little off tangent and talked to him about like his favorite movies. He's a fan of The Producers, the Mel Brooks film, which I love.
Yeah. And musicals also, which was cool. Cool to hear. Donald O'Connor in particular.
Yep. I asked him, are you Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly fan? And he said Donald O'Connor.
I love that. Yeah, unexpected.
He worked with Donald O'Connor, he mentioned.
I heard that, but I couldn't quite hear what movie that was. Were you able to hear that?
Yep. Miracle in the Manger.
Does not sound like a horror movie.
No, Bill said he was not initially drawn to horror films. That was not his favorite genre, you know, but for what it's worth, that's where he's made his legacy.
I was going to ask him what made him go in that direction, like sci-fi and horror. And, you know, like you said, Vincent, we were kind of having some recording issues and kind of didn't really get to that question. But I'd be curious about that. Like, was it just like a budget issue? Was it like that's what they could make on a low budget but still make a lot of money off of it? Or was it, you know, were there other reasons for it? I'd be curious to know that, but we didn't really get a chance to ask him that.
Yeah, same. But it sounds like he's had a long, varied career.
Yeah.
But clearly most known for his horror movies. So there's a box set called Weird Wisconsin from Arrow Video with a number of his films. Monster Go-Go, Invasion from Inner Earth, Twister's Revenge, which is apparently about a killer truck that comes to life. All this stuff that we love. But I brought it up and he made us laugh because he said, I'm not going to talk about that.
I couldn't tell if that was a sore spot for him or if he was just like done with the interview, you know? It was hard to tell.
Same.
So you've seen a couple of movies from that box set, right? Or just one, maybe?
Just one. Invasion from Inner Earth. Great title. The movie starts off very strong. Shot on his... So he bought this property out in Wisconsin. He dubbed it the Shooting Ranch. Not at first. He said it was like the Funny Farm, Green Acres. He's a big Green Acres fan, we've learned. But yeah, so he shot a number of his movies there on the ranch. And Invasion from Inner Earth is about a group of young people shacked up in a cabin during a snowstorm. But there are aliens that have apparently invaded. Unclear if it's from inside the earth or outside the earth. But there's like a mass hysteria, like the aliens have infected the greater population. I mean, there's not much more to the plot than that, but to me, it struck me as a combination of Night of the Living Dead with the unexplained mass hysteria and people turning into zombies, if you will, meets The Thing from Another World, because you have this small party of people snowbound in a cabin. So it's like a great concept. It doesn't totally keep you on the edge of your toes till the end.
Yeah.
But it's a strong start, like a really strong first third of the picture. Yeah. You can find it for free if you're curious.
I am. Yeah. I would love to watch it. Sounds a little bit like The Evil Dead, maybe, but maybe that's just like where my mind is going, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Evil Dead. Can we get Sam Raimi on this podcast?
Well, that might take a little, you know, that might take some work, but we'll see. Possibly. But yeah, I do want to see more of his movies. Twister's Revenge sounds kind of cool. I hope it's better than Killdozer, though.
I hope so. It's from 1988, so I think it might, so it's post Spider Invasion. And, you know, honestly, Spider Invasion, because I was watching Invasion from Inner Earth, which came out the year before, and it's so low budget that honestly, I was surprised at how high budget in Giant Spider Invasion was. So I'm hoping anything post that film kind of continues on a little bit of a more polished track.
Yeah.
It helps as a viewer sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What else do we talk about? Or anything else that we want to talk about?
I mean, I liked some of the other special effects in the movie too. Like the opening credits are against a shot of like the cosmos, like the night sky or whatever. And then you see like the meteor like streaking through the sky. That was a cool way to open the movie.
Yeah. Okay. That reminds me. I think what Bill was talking about at the end was this new footage. I think he's trying to bring out the alien connection a little bit more.
Mm.
Because cool. We know that the spiders came from outer space from a black hole. But beyond the initial meteor crash, like there's nothing that happens with extraterrestrials or anything.
Right. That's cool. I hope the new footage kind of goes more into that because I like that element of it. There's one kind of cool moment where there's like a helicopter hovering over the crater where like the spiders come out of, and it looks kind of blurry and weird. And I couldn't totally tell, but I feel like the guy on the chopper was like, you know, it's like a black hole. I can't tell what's going on down there. And I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. I like that. So maybe they'll go more into that in the new footage. That'd be interesting. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. Let's do like a quick breakdown. Oh, there was actually one jump scare that got me. It was the alcoholic wife. I think her name was Evie. She's in bed in her bedroom, and these tarantulas are everywhere, like these live tarantulas. And this is where it gets kind of sad, because her husband thinks she's seeing pink elephants, you know, mm-hmm. The DTs, when you're an extreme alcoholic, you start to envision nightmare things, and she's seeing these tarantulas. Anyways, she wakes up. The scene is very calm. She goes to her dresser drawer. She opens the drawer, and a giant fuzzy puppet spider jumps out at her. as goofy as it looks, it got me a little bit.
Yeah, agreed. The suspense in that scene is actually sort of well done, because you keep on thinking that she's going to like see one of the actual tarantulas, or it's going to crawl on her or something. But it's not that. It's the giant like spider in the dresser, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good gotcha moment. It got me, I'll say that.
Yeah. You know, nothing really, like, I didn't hate anything in this movie. Sure, some of the more, you know, the sexually exploitive moments for what it is, but you know, I kind of lost the plot a little bit towards the end.
Yeah.
Like, was there a black hole in the area on Earth? Like, the physics escaped me. And knowing that the script was half-baked, you know, guess that comes with the territory.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. One good thing, if I could add a good thing real quick. You and I talked about this earlier. We didn't really ask Bill about this, but there's like this priest character, like this preacher is a better word for it, who is like talking about sin and how, like, you know, people committing sin that will, like, you know, experience their comeuppance and have to atone before God and all this stuff. And that's like kind of like a through line during the movie. Like, that's there's an early scene and a late scene featuring that preacher, and he also appears at like certain moments throughout. And I don't really know exactly what that has to do with the spider storyline, but it is kind of like an interesting structure to just have that guy reappear every once in a while. And it makes for kind of like just I don't know. There are some scenes that kind of drag and get a little bit boring, and then suddenly that guy appears and he's like screaming at you, and it's like, oh, that's a, like an effective way to like regain your interest, you know? So I like that guy. I would not like that guy in real life, but like as featured in the movie, that's a good element. I like that.
Agreed. And Alan Hale, he was campy. I was saying this to Bill too, that he seemed to just, well, Bill said that Alan was just being himself. He's kind of a good-natured sheriff, a little larger than life, kind of yucking it up. But it works for him, and he knows what he's doing. He breaks the fourth wall at one point. He looks at the camera, which I found so funny. Yeah. And what someone has a line. There's a campy line about, oh, because the doctors, Dr. Langer and Dr. Vance, are trying to explain the physics to... to the sheriff. And Dr. Langer, Barbara Hale, she says, well, sheriff, you remember your physics, right? And he says something like, I used to take physics, but now I take prunes. Something yeah. like that.
What does that even mean? Yeah. You know, to be honest, some of the sheriff stuff did grow kind of old, in my opinion. And I think some of those stock characters, maybe I would put more in the bad category. Like, there's some good stuff, too. But, like, the sheriff and then, like, you know, like the young kid who's, like, dating the attractive sister-in-law of Evie, the alcoholic wife. That storyline gets a little bit old. Like, and, like, also the moment where, like, Dr. Langer and Dr. Vance first meet each other. And Dr. Vance... you know, is surprised to see a woman in the planetarium or the research facility. And he's like, oh, Dr. Langer must be your dad or your brother or your husband. And she's like, nope, that's me. And I kind of rolled my eyes and was like, oh, of course they have to have a moment like this, you know? So some of that gets a little bit dull and boring. But then, like I said, there's like, you know, a giant spider or some like gross weird thing that kind of like captures your interest again.
Yeah. It's something. I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I connected with Bill.
Yeah.
I'd like to make this work again at some point. I don't know. We'll see.
I hope so. And maybe we'll go to a screening in person. That'd be great.
Maybe. Honestly. I think in person might be the way to go with Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. He mentioned this. He wants to start like a workshop thing for Wisconsin filmmakers,
which sounds amazing. I think he was saying that he wants to have that in his house, which is pretty cool and such a great idea. I just wish there were more film workshops and libraries and resources just like everywhere. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, definitely in touch with his community, his state. What was he saying? Like, he was saying something about Madison and or Milwaukee, like the film societies. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they want to do screenings down in those cities, and he'd rather do things up north.
Yeah, I think that's what he was saying. Yeah. And maybe, like, my takeaway from that is just like he was saying that, like, that's where the film organizations are located, you know? And he wishes that it was, like, in more remote, rural, northern areas. But yeah, I think he was saying that organizations in those cities want to screen the film as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of interest for it, deservedly so. You know, I think it does, it's that perfect, so bad it's good type of movie.
Yeah, agreed. Like, you know, just to be totally candid, you can cut this out of the episode if you want, yeah, but like, sure. You know, for me, I feel like Troll 2, for example, is like the height of so bad it's good, where it's like so surreal, so bizarre. Every moment is like, how did this happen? Like, and like, there are moments in Giant Spider Invasion that, like I said, do kind of get a little dull. But yeah, I mean, certainly this movie is in like the so bad it's good pantheon. And there are so many moments that are like imaginative and fun to watch and really striking and unique. And just the fact that it was shot for like $300,000 and I think made like $23 million worldwide is amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah, there was something about it.
Yeah.
It's in the pantheon. I like that.
Yeah, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space, most Ed Wood movies, like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because that's, it was made so earnestly, I feel like. Like, there's, so, like, that's to me, like, a true campy movie where, yeah. Yeah, it's rough around the edges. The effects are bad, but the actors aren't playing it tongue-in-cheek. Even Alan Hale, like, he does drop it in at times, and like when he's on the phone, you know, he's doing some real acting. He's not phoning it in. No pun intended. So, you know, like Ed Wood's, like Plan 9, like Troll 2, like they're a mess, but don't tell the directors that to them. Right. They were making a real movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if you have that love for movies and just like the creative drive, then like that will make the movie worth watching no matter what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm happy to end this conversation on that note.
Cool. I love it. I think, yeah, we can make something out of that and then add some Bill quotes to something, social media or something. I don't know.
And, you know, I'll add trailers and things. And
cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was, you know, good job just like trying to make that work on the fly. Sorry, maybe the audio didn't quite work out, but, you know, I think it worked out okay in general. We made it happen.
We made it happen with a wing and a prayer. Thank you for rolling with it.
Thank you. I feel like you made that work. So, yeah, glad we talked to him, and I think we'll be able to pull something fun out of that.
I think so, too. Dearest listeners, thank you so much for going on that journey with us. It was truly a memorable experience, and we hope we did salvage enough to make this an enjoyable listening experience for you. Do check out The Giant Spider Invasion. It's on Tubi. It's widely available on streaming. If you want to buy the DVD, I'm sure those proceeds go to Bill Rabane and his company, so you can't go wrong there. It really is a movie you should experience for yourself. But let us know what you think of it. Please, please let us know what you think about this episode, about whether or not you'd like to hear more from Bill Rabane. Honestly, we would have him back on the show in a heartbeat. You can leave a rating and review of this podcast, Camp Kaiju, on your favorite streamers, on your favorite podcast apps. Visit patreon.com/campkaiju for more reviews and special content. You can get in touch with us there on campkaijupodcast.com, campkaiju@gmail.com, on Instagram. Leave us a voicemail number. Join the ranks of Bill. Be a brief voice that will live on in eternity on the airwaves at 612-470-2612. Now, Camp Kaiju is recorded in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with Mina's Mailbox, music by Ben Cook-Feltz. We'll get back to Mina's Mailbox in our regular programming next time with The Addiction. So join us with that one. Thank you for listening. And until next time, stay campy.
See the movie Jaws? Well, it makes that shark look like a goldfish.
I know.
Vance, I have a feeling the sheriff's putting you on. I'm sure he's taken physics.
Oh, I used to take physics. But now I find that prunes do the better job.